If writer Saladin Ahmed never typed another word, he'd already have introduced us to so many interesting people. Right now, he's the author on two major titles for Marvel Comics, The Magnificent Ms. Marvel and Miles Morales, Spider-Man. If it's been a while since you've caught up, Peter Parker has handed the mantle over to Miles, who's a biracial teenager living in Brooklyn.
How could there be two Spider-Men? There can't be two Spider-Men. Can there?
That's from Into the Spider-Verse, a recent film featuring Miles Morales. Saladin Ahmed took over the comic book version of the character from creator Brian Bendis and is putting his own stamp on the story. He's also cranking out all manner of surprising and wonderful prose. Let's take a listen to him reading from one of his short stories, Mr. Hodges' Sunset Ride. This will give you a sense of his style.
I've ridden with good men and bad men, but I've never ridden with a man like Mr. Hodge. That wasn't his proper name, just a way of calling the old man respectful-like. My pa taught me that if I ever met a man from the old country, to call him Hodge. Damn near the only thing that son of a bitch ever taught me. Anyhow, a good few years back now, when I was a young, full-of-himself bounty hunter, I fell in with Mr. Hodge in the Black Hills. We rode together for about a year. He was a little leather-brown knot of a man with a moonlight white beard, and he took an immediate and powerful shine to me on account of my paws being from Araby. Now, understand I'm a bastard. I carry my mama's name, O'Connor. But the way I look, a little bit darker than the average man I know, and you can see the hatchet nose, well, I get taken for a lot of things. South of the border, I've fibbed that I was half Mexican. Lived a summer trading with the Cheyenne, claiming to be part red man. Even got chased out of town once when I winked at the wrong girl because they were sure as could be that I was a mulatto. It can be hell sometimes being different things to different folks, but it can be right useful too. Well, Mr. Hodge must have smelled the old country in my blood somehow. Like I say, he took a shine to me, and my knowing how to call him respectfully seemed to seal it for him. I can't say I ever understood it, but Mr. Hodge was the kind of man you wanted on your side, so I wasn't about to complain. For what it's worth, I was the last man ever saw him alive.
Saladin Ahmed, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
You got into writing for poetry. I feel like that's kind of akin to exploring an interest in architecture and the trades by building a house. I mean, it's not an easy form to master. What did working in an economical format like poetry do for your writing?
It's just that. It definitely taught me economy. It taught me that you can say a lot with a few words, that you can evoke a lot of feeling in people with a few words if they're carefully chosen. And so I really have brought that to everything that I've written, whether it's prose or comics or dabbling in TV, whatever it might be. I try and bring that energy from poetry.
There may be some people listening to this who heard you read around Detroit or other spots on the spoken word scene. But for those who didn't, what are your poems like?
Oh, gosh. I'm not much of an active poet these days. So mostly they're sort of a portrait of me as a younger writer. But they were always sort of, even though they were different forms, they were concerned with a lot of the same things I've stayed concerned with. They've been about justice, about people, working people, about different kinds of people's stories, and also been about genre. You know, I was putting werewolves and Valkyries and things like that into poetry, even when I was supposed to be writing a very abstract poetry for my MFA years ago. I was always sort of filtering in comic book and fantasy elements into there. So I think the subjects stay the same even as the form changes for me.
So attentive readers could have seen all this coming, really.
Maybe, if people actually read poetry. more than 17 people actually read those poems, yes.
Well, you got into comics writing something that was maybe only slightly less ambitious. You were recruited to do a run of Marvel's Black Bolt. He's a little bit less well-known than Iron Man or Captain Marvel, so I think I better lay it out. He's the king of the Inhumans, a super team, and really an entire class of people who populate the Marvel universe. And he's almost ridiculously powerful, capable of, you know, breaking down a building with his voice, and super strong. And you basically put him in an interstellar prison and had him figure his way out of the situation, while at the same time coming into contact with some well-known figures from the Marvel Universe. What was it like coming in on a character that beloved to hardcore fans of comic books?
Yeah, it was an interesting challenge of a book because it was meant to both sort of introduce a character who's sort of not necessarily known to everybody who knows who Spider-Man or Wolverine is, but also meant to sort of be a reach out to hardcore fans who have this established relationship. Black Bolt was created by Jack Kirby, you know, gosh, all these, you know, 50 years ago, something. So, you know, there are people who've been following him for decades. And it's like most of my work with Marvel, it was this sort of balance between bringing a new voice to the character and sort of honoring the legacy.
You came up in the 1980s at a time when the X-Men and Secret Wars were kind of the big events in the Marvel Universe. It's very heavy psychological stuff and very heavy on character interactions, although obviously with tons of the, you know, the big fight sequences that we go to comics mm-hmm. for. What were the writers who were doing those stories doing that hooked you?
You know, it's been fascinating for me coming to the industry as an adult because 30 years ago when I was reading those stories, 35 years ago I was reading those stories, I didn't know who the writers were. I just knew the characters, right? As was the case, I think, for most comic book fans for most of comic book history. And so it's only as an adult that I've come to realize that writers like Chris Claremont, Ann Nesenti, Tony Isabella, all these people who are telling these very human stories and very, not just human in some broad universal sense, but very rooted human stories that were about characters with actual ethnic and class histories and professions that they came from and things like that affected who they were. And really, it was about real people like that kind of trying to contend with absurd galactic scale conspiracies and powers and things like that. And that synthesis, which to me has always been a kind of hallmark of Marvel, but in the 80s got a certain kind of real hardcore focus from some of those writers. It taught me a lot about becoming a writer.
It feels like also it was a place for those of us who didn't really like soap operas to indulge in some of the pleasures of soap operas, the ongoing storylines and the cliffhangers and all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you had told me as a you know 10-year-old boy that I loved soap operatics, I would have had a very stupid gendered reaction and twisted up my face. But absolutely, I've tried to hook into that as a writer too. Dynamics are to me what comic books are about as much as anything. What happens between characters, and that's emotional as much as it is who can beat who in a fight.
Comics are, at the end of the day, basically a form of serialized fiction. Mm-hmm. How have you adapted your writing to that kind of story?
Well, it's a very different form with very different demands. And to some degree, I sort of had to learn that. I was lucky in having Black Bolt as my first character because I got to sort of narrate a lot of his thoughts since he can't speak. And so it was a sort of transition from prose for me. And I worked with an artist, Christian Ward, and an editor, Will Moss, who were all very helpful in kind of teaching me to step back when the pictures could tell the story, right? And to trust the reader a bit more in a way that in prose you sort of handhold a bit. You have to do all the evocation through words, right, of sight, of sound, of everything. You're working as part of a collaborative team when you do that in comics, and it's been liberating for me, actually, to get to do that. It's made me very productive as a writer, and so clearly there's something in me that clicked.
You took over writing Miles Morales, the guy that Brian Bendis created to sort of move Spider-Man's legacy forward. He's the character that people might have seen in Into the Spider-Verse, the animated film from 2 years ago, and he's a kid. He's a young kid. He lives in Brooklyn, and he's a very different guy than Peter Parker, who was the original Spider-Man. Miles Morales is maybe not as much of a wise guy, maybe a little bit more vulnerable, and still figuring out his heroicism and like how it works to be a superhero. What have you enjoyed about writing him?
Oh, Miles has just been an absolute blast to write. And when Marvel came to me, I was, you know, it was just such an enthusiastic yes. It's because he does embody a lot of Peter and a lot of what I loved about Peter as a kid, this sort of confused teenage superhero trying to balance everything at once and sort of constantly having stuff thrown at him. He's, you know, a working class kid from Outerboro, New York. And I think that that's all continuity with Peter rather than difference from him. But I do think Miles has his differences. He's kind of cooler than Peter. He might be more emotionally vulnerable, less of a wise cracker in some sense. But I think even as the sort of converse of that, he's a little hipper than Peter was.
Yeah.
And that's fun to write. You know, the first couple arcs of the book were drawn by Javier Garon, who is excellent at drawing clothes, and that's so important in a teenager's world, right?
I did not even think of that, but that's really true.
The haircuts, all of that stuff matters, and readers have really responded to Miles kind of representing the next generation with that stuff. But probably the primary thing, the center for Miles that is maybe a little lacking in Peter's life is family. He has, you know, two stable parents at home. Who've just become parents to his little sister.
Baby
in the
sister
comic,
now, too.
Actually.
Yeah.
And they both know that he's Spider-Man. They're both sort of worried but supportive. And he has an uncle who's a sort of on again, off again supervillain or anti-hero type. And so he's got a network around him of family, of community that was always absent with Peter, who always felt very like a very lonely character to me.
You know, if there's a thread through your stories that you've written both in prose form and for comic books, it feels like a strong sense that good guys need to win, even if stories are not always, strictly speaking, happy endings. And I just can't help but thinking, given the dark turn that so many comics titles have taken in recent years, I just think that your worldview is kind of an interesting choice for some heroes. Do you feel like it's an easy fit for you?
Huh. That's an interesting point. I guess it is pretty important to me to I work a lot to redefine who the heroes and villains are. Right, that they might not follow the patterns we've been told so far in these genres. But at the end of the day, I think there are some good guys and bad guys, and I think it's important to show models where good guys can win through working together, through self-sacrifice, through community, through sort of embracing empathy rather than greed. I think it's crucial right now to show that that can lead to victories, even if sometimes, you know, this is mythology stuff, right? That's what our comic book stories, our fantasy stories are right now. These are the mythology of our modern day. And for me, those myths should show heroes. They should show heroes triumphing in a way that can inspire us, even when that victory is not always entirely possible in real life. It gives us something to strive for.
Is that something that occupies much of your thought about the real world too?
You know, I've got kids, so you have to have some. I'm a very dark, cynical person by nature, and so if I indulge that, you know, it's very easy. Just based on my own experiences as an Arab Muslim man in America for 40-something years, it's very easy to see darkness ahead. And maybe that's realistic, but what are we going to do? Stop going, you know? And we can't keep going if all we see is that darkness. And so I try and think about what skin of their teeth escape, comic book level escape might be possible for my kids in this future. And you know, you just you tell yourself those stories and try and work toward them, even if they're not super realistic all the time.
Right. Another one of the titles that you're working on right now is The Magnificent Ms. Marvel. And again, we need to play a little catch up for folks who may not be dropping by their comic book store every week. Ms. Marvel is no longer the blonde bombshell Carol Danvers, who has gone on and moved her sparkly fists over to become Captain Marvel. Ms. Marvel, as she is read today, is Kamala Khan, Jersey City's Muslim-American teenage superhero who is able to change her body's shape, embiggening into whatever situation she needs to fill. And another one of Marvel's younger characters who's sort of finding her way into a world of heroes. This was another title that has just come to mean so much to people, both in terms of representation and just in terms of storytelling power in the last couple of years. Is she easy for you to write?
No, she's she's deeply difficult for me to write. I mean, if I think about what's been my biggest challenge writing, it's been Kamala, which is odd. You know, people are sort of, when I started to talk about working at Marvel, everyone's like, oh, you've got to write, you know, because there are
so because she's Arab American?
Muslim. Well, she's Pakistani.
Oh, sorry.
But
yeah.
Because she's Muslim American. And so, you know, of course, you've got to do this. And naturally enough, when Willow, the co-creator of the character.
Willow Wilson, yeah.
Willow Wilson went on to write Wonder Woman in DC, you know, she wanted to hand this character off. She and Sana Ananat, who had at Marvel, who had co-created this character, they wanted to hand this character off to somebody who understood some things about her, for lack of a more subtle way to put it, right? And I was deeply intimidated at the prospect of taking over the comic, and yet I had all sorts of ideas about where the character might go. And so there's been a bit of a learning curve. Even though we've got lots in common, I think in a strange way I have more in common with Miles I think we're conditioned so much along the lines of gender. And especially when I was a young man, we were. And that getting into a teenage girl's head has proven a challenge. And I know that I've dropped the ball at times, but I've sort of found a groove on that book that I feel very comfortable in. And it's meant a lot to me to get it right because she is so important to so many people. When I go to conventions, both with her and with Miles, there are so many young fans out there or older fans who never got to see those characters when they were older or who are getting to see them now as younger folks. And it means the world to them to see these characters out there. And it's only going to be more the case as these characters get larger platforms, you know. Kamala's got a TV show coming to Disney Plus next year, and it does feel like a kind of responsibility to not screw it up too bad. So, I'm still learning. I'm still learning, but it's a delightful book to write.
You've taken the opportunity to introduce the world to Dearborn's first superhero through Ms. Marvel, Fadi Fadlallah, who's also known as Amulet. You want to tell us about this guy? We're going to be meeting him in March.
Yeah, so Fadi is a ex-football player from Dearborn, Michigan, who in his superhero life is the mystical defender Amulet. I knew as soon as Marvel called me a couple of years back that I would like to introduce an Arab American superhero to the company, and but that's a process. You first have to sort of build the trust and the sort of respect with the folks there that they're willing to kind of give you that shot. You have to kind of find the right niche for the character. A lot of pieces have to be in place. And so I'd been thinking for a couple of years now that I would like to introduce such a character. But who exactly he would be, exactly what his powers were, all of that sort of kind of built along the way. And so Fadi will debut in The Magnificent Ms. Marvel number 13, which is out in March, I believe March 4th. We're doing a big signing in Dearborn, Michigan. I'm really excited. And he's going to be Marvel's first Arab American, at least prominent first Arab American superhero. And he's going to be, we've already got a couple of other appearances lined up for him after that.
Oh, nice.
And he's a kind of gentle giant type. He's a defensive tackle from Dearborn who quit football because he hurt somebody, and it was very important for me to show an Arab man and a Muslim man or young man who was kind. You know, we don't see a lot of that in our media. We see a lot of angry, fanatical guys with beards and not a lot else. And so so I wanted to show that we could also be goofy, sweet, you know, big lugs. And so that's kind of who Fatty is. And we'll see more and more of him and learn more and more of his backstory. He's got a great grandma who's his sort of mentor in fighting monsters. And yeah, we've got a lot of fun stuff planned for the character.
Is he drawn from anybody you knew growing up?
More a type, more a generalization of a lot of guys I knew growing up more than any in one person. But it's pretty telling that as soon as we sort of started to talk about him and his origins online, one reader was literally like, he used to play defensive tackle for Forts in high school, didn't he? I was like, yeah, that's exactly the energy we are going for. You got it exactly right. So clearly people are seeing themselves and folks who look like them in this character already. Even kind of bigger guys who are not necessarily represented by the hyper-muscularized superhero body type are responding to the character. So it's been really wonderful, and he's not even on the page yet. So
yeah. You know, right now there's a pretty solid sphere of African-American work in pop culture and literature. Everything from Black Panther to all of the amazing other dramatic films that have come out in the recent couple of years. You could argue that the Asian American pop culture sphere has radically expanded in the past 10 years, from K-pop to, you know, seeing different films, you know, come out and get major distribution like The Farewell. I'm still wondering what constitutes the Arab American mass market pop culture sphere.
I think on one level, it's sort of apples and oranges in terms of kind of how even these communities define themselves. I think that the process of coming up with the very notion that there's such a thing as Arab Americans as a unified group has been a very different process than it has been for, say, Black Americans. So I don't know how much comparison we can do, but I definitely see my work and the work of other younger, especially Muslim Americans and Arab Americans out there creating as part of that general trend. I mean, I owe an enormous debt to Black artists and Black genre creators in particular for sort of paving a lot of way and putting up with a lot of stuff to pave that way. But it's encouraging, you know, despite all the sort of horror out there, it is encouraging seeing, especially as I say, the younger creators out there. When I went to create Amulet, I knew that I wanted to have an Arab American artist be the person who designed him visually, because his design was based on the Nazar, which is a sort of symbol in throughout the Mediterranean, the Middle East, but it's particularly important in kind of Lebanese culture. And I wanted to have an Arab American artist, and there's an Arab American artist named Sarah Alfaghi, who's just stunning. I mean, she's like in her 20s. She's very young, and she's already doing amazing work in terms of, she's got a graphic novel coming out, and she's creating characters for Marvel. And so she's sort of just representative of the fact that, especially online, when I interact with the younger artists and younger writers, there's a whole cadre of folks coming up now who, in a couple of years, I think are really going to stun people with everything that they're producing.
Saladin Ahmed is a Detroit area writer. If you are not familiar with his work, best to start with his Hugo-nominated novel, Throne of the Crescent Moon, and progress to Miles Morales Straight Out of Brooklyn, Abbott on Boom Comics, which is his story about a female newspaper reporter who takes on forces both seen and unseen. There may be a few more chapters in her story coming our way. And The Magnificent Ms. Marvel number 13, featuring Amulet, will be in your local comic book shop in March. Saladin, it's awesome talking to you. Thank you for making some time for us.
Thank you.